What is up, everybody? Welcome to episode 19 of the Radio Live Transmission Podcast, music reviews from music lovers. I am your host, Ryan. Thank you for listening. Today, we're going to be talking about four new albums that all came out on January 26th. We're going to be talking about the new Machine Head record, Catharsis. We're going to be talking about the new Calexico record, By the Thread That Keeps Us. We're going to be talking about the new Orphaned Land record, Unsung Prophets and Dead Messiahs, and we're also going to be talking about the new Evidence record, which is entitled Whether or Not. As I said, all these records came out on January 26th. And also, starting today, I wanted to also do a little something extra on the podcast because, as you may have guessed, I tend to listen to a lot more music throughout the year than I can review, just because of having a full-time job and having a family, having two boys. It's kind of hard for me to review more than, more than like four albums a week. Yeah, it gets a little difficult, but I do tend to listen to a lot more music than I am able to review. So what I'm going to do from this point on is on every episode, I'm just going to throw out a few names of new records that I think you should check out. That I'm not going to review. I'm just going to mention them, and you got everybody feel free to go out and check them out or not, whatever you want to do. So starting today, I'll be doing that. And as far as records that came out on the 26th, there's a new record from the alternative band The Spook School. It's a record that's called Could It Be Different. That's a good record to check out. There is a new record from the band Portal, the metal band Portal. It's called Ion. That's a really interesting record. You should check it out. And also, there is a record from electronic artist Johnny Jewel that's called Digital Rain. It's also an interesting record. So, check out those three records if you feel inclined, and let me know what you think. So, moving on to today's reviews. First, I'm going to be talking about, I'm going to have to take a deep breath here, the new Machine Head record entitled Catharsis. So, Machine Head frontman Rob Flynn, he's still as pissed off as he's ever been, if not more so, at the world, at society, at politics, at yada, yada, yada. And his opening call of Fuck the World on the track Volatile, which is the first track on the album, establishes a major theme on this record. And that's an examination of our world as Flynn sees it, divided, agitated, controlled by villains, and waiting for a spark to ignite and combust. Now, surprisingly, this album also finds Machine Head experimenting more than they have really since their nu metal days in the late 90s. While I respect this willingness to push the envelope and to try new things, for me, this album misses the mark as often as it hits the mark, if not more. The aforementioned track Volatile and the electronic tinged and melody driven title track Catharsis, and the solid groove driven track Beyond the Pale. Those first three tracks form a relatively solid opening for the record, despite some awkward vocal choices from Flynn, who for most of this record seems to be trying to squeeze too many words into each line, as if he's afraid he won't get his message across if he's not being verbose about it lyrically. And from there, from, you know, from the, that relatively solid, you know, 1-2-3 punch of the opening three tracks, the record embarks on a real roller coaster of quality that I can't help but feel it could have been avoided by leaving like 5 or 6 tracks off of this album. You know, in their heyday, Machine Head made albums that ran them, you know, for about an hour long, probably. Even a more recent album like The Blackening, which is, you know, considered a classic album, clocked in at 61 minutes and change. And then its follow-up, which was called Unto the Locust, which was also a solid album, clocked in at 45 minutes, which was, you know, their shortest album. So Catharsis, this new album, like its predecessor, an album called Bloodstone and Diamonds, which is from a few years ago, is over 70 minutes long. I just don't get it. You know, this sort of long-winded approach to a, you know, thrash slash groove metal album, which consists mainly of 4 to 6 minute songs, is to me a recipe for near disaster. You know, and Machine Head just go off the rails on a track called California's Bleeding, and also a track called Triple Beam, which are these tracks are decent musically, but lyrically, they just make me scratch my head and wonder if Flynn, you know, thinks he's back in the late 90s rewriting, you know, the rap metal of, you know, an album like The Burning Red's weaker moments. The band, you know, get back on track for the most part on the song Kaleidoscope, despite some more vocal awkwardness in its verses. And then the band just goes complete arena metal cheese on the track Bastards. You know, the silliness of which disappoints me greatly, especially since, you know, the Flynn's message to his sons in the lyrics of, you know, being themselves in the face of great adversity is an admirable one. But the track is just a mess. It's just a complete mess. And it really made me scratch my head. And you know, from there, the record improves somewhat. The tracks Hope Begets Hope and Screaming at the Sun, you know, while not groundbreaking, are more successful hybrids, I think, of the band's various personalities. The track Behind the Mask hints at the potential that an all-acoustic Machine Head track could have, while the track Heavy Lies the Crown, which is sort of like an 8-minute attempt at Iron Maiden or Metallica's more epic moments, finds Flynn, thankfully, you know, going for more of a concept-driven approach, you know, and a less, you know, on-the-nose sort of lyrical approach. So after what feels like a natural climax to the album on Heavy Lies the Crown, the band they run through 3 more, you know, average songs, the best of which is the track Grind You Down, in my opinion. Before finally arriving at the closing track, which is called Eulogy, which is an interesting departure in the vein of a track like The Burning Red off of that record from 99. But Eulogy has a more organic feel to the instrumentation that I think should have been explored more on this album. Kind of disappointed that it wasn't. And I think that... my buddy and also a dedicated listener to this podcast, a guy by the name of Zach Stairwalt. What's up, Zach? I think Zach said it best. We're talking about this album. He said that there's a lot of potential in the experimentation on this record, even if it's not always realized. And I think that's the bottom line here. So here's hoping that Machine Head use, you know, these less explored facets of their personality more concisely on their next project. Please, Mr. Flynn, if you're listening, don't become the Peter Jackson of thrash metal, please. All right. Begging you. All right. So I gave the record Catharsis a rating of 5 out of 10. And for recommended listening, check out the tracks Volatile and also the title track, Catharsis. So moving along, the next record I'd like to talk about today is the new Calexico record, which is called The Thread That Keeps Us. So, Tucson, Genre Blending Collective, Calexico, return with The Thread That Keeps Us. I don't know if I just said The Thread That Keeps Us. I think I said something else. But anyway, it's The Thread That Keeps Us. which is a follow-up to 2015's record Edge of the Sun. Okay, so this album really finds Calexico playing to their strengths as a sort of border-crossing musical entity, and you know, at the same time using the backdrop of an increasingly polarized nation like our own for lyrical inspiration. This is how the band makes a track like the track Under the Wheels, an upbeat, danceable tune with lyrics written seemingly on the eve of destruction, work pretty seamlessly. Other tracks on the album convey a sense of resignation amid peril, something like the track End of the World With You, or the dynamic of urgency and hope on the track Bridge to Nowhere. And in other places, the lyrics convey a sense of loss of hope on a track like Thrown to the Wild. Musically, what I find most interesting about this record is how well the band used the music to evoke imagery that's alluded to in the lyrics. Electric guitars flicker in and out of the mix as the songs, you know, paint pictures of a society ready to combust, both physically, for example, the wildfires in California at the moment, and also socially and politically. Calexico also find the opportunity to be whimsical, as on the 60s pop throwback sound of the song The Town and Miss Lorraine. They also give a nod to the influence of Mexican music and culture on the track Flores y Tamales. On this record, the band occupy a space that's somewhere between multicultural jam band and protest folk, I'd say. It's a clever approach. One that in theory would reach the maximum number of listeners. It's commercial enough to be considered mainstream while socially conscious enough to pique the interest of a more intellectual listener. And for me, that's a recipe for success. While Calexico could never be said to have progressed, you know, in leaps and bounds from record to record, records like The Thread That Keeps Us, they satisfy, you know, this particular listener's craving for songs that'll, you know, that can make you move and think at the same time. So I gave The Thread That Keeps Us a rating of 7.5 out of 10. And for recommended listening, you should check out the tracks Bridge to Nowhere and also the track Under the Wheels. All right, so moving on to the next album I'd like to talk about today. It's the new record from hip-hop artist Evidence. It's a record entitled Weather or Not, and that's weather as in, you know, the weather outside is frightful, that kind of weather. Evidence, you know, of Dilated People's fame and stalwart of the hip-hop underground, returns with Weather or Not, an album that is sure to please fans of 90s hip-hop like myself, who are nostalgic for a time, you know, when rappers enunciated and they valued their lyrical reputation at least as much as their image. You know, with production, you know, from a late 90s, early 21st century Who's Who list, including The Alchemist, DJ Premier, Knots, and DJ Babu, Evidence rides, you know, the mid-tempo tracks on this record with a flow that can seem lazy in an industry that has seen the likes of Busta Rhymes, Twista, Tech N9ne, Crazy Bone. It's not until you sort of absorb Evidence's lyrics that you realize the genius that is under the surface of much of the material. And although the production doesn't steer too far from, you know, a sort of East meets West aesthetic, there's enough variety to keep things from growing stale. The production on tracks like the opener, which is called The Factory, and also the title track, sound like they belong to the dimly lit streets of New York City, you know, on a cold winter night. While the track Powder Cocaine, and also the track Jim Dean, exude a sort of West Coast sensibility one can imagine, you know, as a sun kind of breaking through clouds. the majority of the tracks fall somewhere in between, you know, on this sort of the spectrum of aesthetic. The most striking production for me comes on a track called Raindrops, which, you know, instantly conjured in my mind a picture of a rain-soaked window as soon as the beat came on. You know, the lack of variety and tempo on this record does make it seem a bit overlong. I mean, it's about an hour long. Probably could have been shorter. Probably could have been about 45 minutes. But none of the tracks really feel superfluous in and of themselves. So, you know, one gathers from listening to Whether or Not that Evidence really has little to no desire to break into the hip-hop mainstream. And I can only respect an artist like that who has the will to stay true to himself. So I gave the record Whether or Not a rating of 7 out of 10. And as far as recommended listening, you should check out the tracks Jim Dean and also the track Raindrops. All right, so moving on to the final record for today and my pick of the week. It's the album Unsung Prophets and Dead Messiahs from the metal band Orphanland. Okay, so Israel's pioneers of quote-unquote oriental metal, Orphanland, have been spending more than 20-odd years honing their particular brand of heavy music, which, while being impressive in and of itself, is equally impressive in that Orphanland have been able to be prosperous and successful in an area of the world that is not very tolerant to forms of music such as heavy metal. Anybody that's interested in exploring this issue should watch the documentary film Heavy Metal in Baghdad. That's a great documentary. I recommend anybody, you know, check that out, even if whether you like metal or not. You know, the religious, the cultural, and the social climate of the Middle East provides plenty of fuel for this band, and it shows through on this album. Sonically, this album follows a sort of Middle Eastern take on dramatic metal in the vein of bands like Iron Maiden. But Orphanland used the influence of Jewish and Arabic music to distinguish themselves brilliantly from run-of-the-mill metal bands, and one really has to look no further than the opening track on this album, which is called The Cave, to find Orphanland's proficiency on display. You know, having an 8-minute opening track, even on a metal album, is, you know, sort of a risky move, but the cinematic feel of this track, which includes string sections, haunting female vocals in the beginning, and the use at different times on different times of the song of a choir, is utilized for an effect that is, for me, reminiscent of the band Ghost, Swedish band Ghost. Orphanland's vocalist, a guy by the name of Kobe Fari, establishes his range as a vocalist here as well, you know, pairing near operatic melodies and, you know, with deep death metal growls to make a really sort of dynamic vocal attack. An emotive guitar solo only heightens the drama on this song. And then after the opener, Orphanland runs through a track called We Do Not Resist, where Fari's growls really sort of move to center stage. Musically, the track is much crunchier and straightforward than The Cave, though guitarist Adan Amsalem, I believe I'm pronouncing that correctly, sorry if I didn't, provides a beautiful passage on the instrument that's called the bouzouki, or bouzouki. I don't know how to. There's going to be a lot of stuff in this review that I probably pronounce wrong, but good intent. We'll just say I have good intentions here. So Amsalem provides a beautiful bouzouki passage at the closing of this track, which leads right into the next track, which is called In Propaganda, on which the melodies and the arrangement are driven really by the influence of, you know, the band's surrounding musical environment, more so than on the previous tracks. The next track, which is called All Seeing Eye, is a beautiful ballad. And the next track, which is called Yedidi, follows in the track In Propaganda's lead. And then the album comes to the track Chains Fall to Gravity, which, you know, at nearly 10 minutes, presents the next epic composition of this record. And it incorporates the balladry of the previous tracks, you know, with a pretty cool instrumental break in the middle that's sort of in the style of Opeth, and also a guitar solo from none other than Steve Hackett, of Genesis fame, who apparently collaborated with Kobe Fari once before on a project of his own. I was not aware of that until I researched this album. So. Now the next track, which is called Like Orpheus, which features vocals from the singer from Blind Guardian, whose name is Hansi Kirsch, it's easily the most accessible track on this album, and not surprisingly, it's the first single. It's the type of song that really could lure folks who have no inclination to metal acts from places outside of the U.S., Europe, you know, and Scandinavia, into the sort of orphan land fold. from there, the band sort of continues with the same MO that they established on the first half of the record, bringing things to a satisfying climax with a vocal assist from Tomas Lindberg of the Swedish band At the Gates on the track Only the Dead Have Seen the End of War. The very last track on the album, which is called Manifest, the epilogue, features spoken word passages from Fari concerning the role of humankind in the sort of plan or scheme of a higher power. And it also contains a sample, spoken word sample of a passage from George Orwell's classic novel 1984. It's an impressive and interesting conclusion to the album, and it makes me curious as to where Orphan Land will go next conceptually. As a whole, Unsung Prophets and Dead Messiahs is the sort of record that can bridge the divide between, you know, open-minded metalheads and then those listeners who have an inclination towards Middle Eastern music or world music in general. This type of record is a treat for me, as a listener who very much enjoys hearing bands from nations all over the globe take on the genre of metal. The only gripe I have is that the record has more of a tendency towards balladry, and I find it a little bit disproportionate, but that's a tiny, tiny detractor, you know, that the band more than makes up for with their sheer talent and ability. So I gave the record Unsung Prophets and Dead Messiahs a rating of 8.5 out of 10. And for recommended listening, check out the track Like Orpheus and also the track In Propaganda. All right, so that wraps up today's reviews. Thank you guys for listening, and catch up with me soon on episode 20, on which I will be reviewing new releases from AWOL Nation, Simple Minds, Sky Zoo, and The Soft Moon. All right, so once again, this is Ryan for the Radio Live Transmission Podcast. Thank you guys for listening. Have a great day.